Good afternoon, 0010.
Good afternoon, and hello, everyone. The voice you just heard was a very good friend of mine. Now, before I introduce you to my friend, allow me to give you a little bit of a background history on him. He was in the United States military, and he became an officer, but he did it the hard way. He went in as enlisted, went to college, got his degree, and became an officer. He retired from the United States military, like I said, as an officer, and went into emergency management. What part of emergency management? That's none of your business, because I'm going to protect him. I like him. In general, I don't like human beings. I just like humanity. But him, I like him. Despite the fact that he's a Dallas Cowboys fan, I'll overlook that every time, because he's a great guy. And I'm not going to give you his real name, but we're just going to go with the name D, as in Dallas. And no, I'm not going to call you Big D. Get that out of your mind right now. So, moving along, did I get your career correct?
You did.
Spot on. Oh, outstanding. Now, how you doing, D?
Good. Good. Yourself?
Oh, glorious. Total grooviness in my life. Can't you tell? Anyway.
Absolutely.
Dripping with sarcasm. But anyway. Now, first thing we want to talk about the hurricane in Puerto Rico and the devastation and the havoc that it wreaked. But you know what? We're going to cover a few things first. We're going to discuss about Puerto Rico itself, the geography, the demographics, the political environment, so on and so forth. Now, the first thing I wanted to say is, I want to ask is, what is the demographics of Puerto Rico? Poverty, education, poverty versus wealth, so on and so forth.
Well, the demographics of Puerto Rico is a fairly poor country. They're a commonwealth as far as some of our other commonwealths go. There's, you know, really the haves and have-nots that make up the population. The island itself has a spiny backbone of a big gigantic mountain that runs down through the middle with a tropical rainforest on the eastern end and, you know, just basically a kind of a subtropical forest the rest of the way across the center of the country. And therefore, it's very diverse climatology for Puerto Rico. On the south side of the island, it's very green, lush. On the north side of the island is very green, lush, and on the south side, it almost has some areas almost are like in the center part of the country is almost like Arizona. It's almost a desert type environment, just because of the way that the storm systems move up through the Caribbean. Mm. It tends not to get a lot of rain in that south central region of the country. Mm. But, you know, there's a few beaches, not the world's greatest beaches, nowhere near in comparison to, say, Hawaii or Guam or something like that, where you have vast amount, you know, everywhere, every island has beautiful beaches. There are a couple islands off the eastern coast of Puerto Rico, Vieques being one of them. It used to be a military range for the Navy back in the day. And that is, has some beautiful beaches on it. Hmm. But then when you get to, the San Juan, I mean, San Juan is like any other major city around the world. There's a lot of poverty, a lot of people all crammed together in a small amount of space. But Puerto Rico has a crumbling infrastructure, you know, that was been in decline for decades.
Now, when you say a crumbling infrastructure, okay, because that is something that I wanted to get into. Now, when you say crumbling infrastructure, as in, like, what is, like, how many major roads do they have as opposed to dirt roads? How many, what are the power plants? What were the condition of the power plants when the federal government got there?
Well, for the road section, there's a major road that runs Highway 2, runs along the northern coast from San Juan over toward about three quarters of the way around the north side of the island going westward, and goes just a little bit east. Then it turns into a basically a two-lane road, and those roads are filled with potholes. And decades ago, I was in Puerto Rico, and it's unbelievable. A lot of potholes, a lot of roads. When it rains, the roads have a tendency to wash out, and you get up into the mountains. Very limited infrastructure. The roads are prone to being with mudslides and a lot of other smaller roads that, getting into the very interior part up in the mountainous region, especially kind of the central and western portions of the mountains, it's very isolated. And those people are very poor. A lot of brownouts from time to time. There were two major power plants that were in the country, that one of which was out of commission due to parts and lack of being maintained, and the fact that they were extremely old. Some of those things were 50, 60 years old.
When you say it was out of commission, are you saying it was out of commission before the hurricane?
Oh, absolutely! Before the last hurricane hit,
So
and
the
the one that was still remaining, took a lot of damage in the hurricane when it came through, and it went offline.
You know what? Let me. Oh, this is really amazing, because here we have an island that should have, and I'll tell me if you disagree at any point in time. Tell me when I'm wrong, if I'm wrong. Here we have an island that should have four power plants. It should have four. Now, the reason why I say four is, let me explain this to the listening audience. And I'm going to bring down the numbers drastically so that way it makes more sense. You have two power plants. And let's say it's a population of, let's say, 20,000 houses. And each power plant is responsible for providing energy to 10,000 houses. But let's say, just to play it safe, each power plant is equipped to carry the load for 15,000 15,000 houses. Because that way, hey, it's better to be overready and underused than vice versa. But now that one power plant went down, well, now guess what? This power plant, that's the one remaining power plant that's capable of carrying energy or electricity to 15,000 homes, now has to carry electricity to 20,000 homes. So now it's being overused. It's being overtaxed. And then when you come along and smack it with a level hurricane like the one that hit Puerto Rico, well, guess what? All havoc, all hell breaks loose. So, is it right for me to make that kind of an analysis or that kind of comparison?
Oh, absolutely. And two, the fact that the power plant being so old, a lot of the parts that were needed to try to get it back up and operational had to come from other places, from Europe and some other places that had some older infrastructure that was still around, or they could remanufacture those parts. A lot of that stuff wasn't manufactured in the United States.
How old were these power plants? When were these places built?
They were built probably 40 years ago or more.
40 years ago. Good God. That's insane. That's insane.
And they had never really been upgraded to real true modern standards.
So
They were very
basically, I mean, we're probably begging, borrowing, and stealing from other countries such as the Ukraine, maybe even Russia, countries that are still 40 years behind technologically.
right. Some places probably in Europe that had manufactured stuff like that and still had some parts laying around and pieces that they could either gin up and remanufacture, or they could find other places that had been decommissioned and they could get the pieces and parts that they needed. But then they had to be put on ships, and it takes weeks to come from Europe
Yeah,
because
because
they're so.
some of these parts weren't very small at all.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely. That's the thing. They can't be shipped by air.
So, what was the response of the politicians of Puerto Rico when all this was coming to light?
Well, a big portion of the, probably a third of the debt was just strictly from the power energy company, debt for just a lot of years of mismanagement and not managing how they were going to get the infrastructure and no plan to upgrade the infrastructure or the power plants.
And what
And so,
did the politicians accept any responsibility for anything, any of this?
oh, absolutely not. I mean, again, it wasn't on their watch. Everybody points fingers. When that happens, well, it was like that before when I got here. It was been like that for years. And then, the analogy that you always hear, well, it's always been like that.
So basically, finger pointing and lying. Because instead of them assuming the responsibility and saying, okay, now that I'm in this political office, now I need to do something to get this upgraded. It may not have happened during their watch, but they neglected it during their watch.
Well, absolutely. And part of that was a lot of that was due to the fact that they were bankrupt. So it kind of, well, we have very limited resources. So, as long as the power plant's working and running and as long as we got one going, we're going to hope and pray for the best. And then when their luck ran out, guess what? Now the federal government has to come in and is going to help them out. But, that again, that's, trying to string massive power transmission lines across a huge mountain range, to all those little villages and all those little places in the mountain, that's a monumental task. I mean, it has to be done by helicopter. I mean, there's not a lot of roads to a lot of those areas where they could actually get in with the type of build those towers. Those towers aren't. It takes time to build a tower for just one power transmission line, across that. So you imagine how many towers they had to build, from the ground up, because some of them were damaged, some weren't, and then trying to restring lines and making sure everything works.
Now, the Puerto Rican National Guard, what role did they play in assisting?
Well, once the active forces got there and things kind of settled down a couple days after the hurricane, they kind of came to life. But you would have thought that there would have been a pre-laid out plan for, okay, when a hurricane hits, 72 hours prior to the hurricane hitting, the National Guard has been called up and activated and have mission assignments on exactly what they're going to do and when they're going to do it. And for example, there's a lot of civil engineer, combat engineers in the Army National Guard, so they know about clearing roads, rock clearing. So being able to get some bulldozers, heavy equipment in to open the roads, move trees, move down power lines. There were down power lines everywhere. And if you looked at if you ever seen any of the pictures from San Juan and some of those areas. You notice most of the telephone poles were leaning, were broken, power lines were all down everywhere. So not only your major transmission lines were down, but all your other power lines were down. So, instead of having that stuff going, modernizing it and burying it like we do now here in the United States, they, because of the way some of the federal funding works, they actually had to go back and put up new telephone poles and restring above ground power lines again. And those power poles and all that stuff had to be brought in by ship. You can't fly those power those telephone poles there.
So nobody bothered to actually take the Puerto Rican National Guard, activate whatever elements they needed, such as the combat engineers, or any aspect of the Puerto Rican National Guard, and have them on standby.
Didn't appear so.
Now, the polit I mean, What is the political environment like in Puerto Rico? Like,
well,
the governor, he's the governor of the island of Puerto Rico. Now, obviously, he's not like, let's say, the governor of New York or the governor of California, the governor of Florida, where they basically have the power. What the hell is up with the governor of Puerto Rico, and why did he seem so powerless when it came to this?
Well, there was a little act that was passed in 1991 called the Autonomous Municipalities Act, which basically established that every municipality had its own would have its own strong mayor, and that municipality legislature would be the, you know, basically the governing body. And so, based on population in each one of these municipalities, would be determined how many people were in that particular local government. And there's 78 of those municipalities that make up Puerto Rico. So basically, you have 78 little fiefdoms that are autonomous and do their own thing. So therefore, the governor doesn't have the authority to tell them, well, what they can and can't do. So it's everybody's got their own little kingdom. They're worried about their own little area. And it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of mutual aid agreements kind of thing between them. Whereas, you know, hey, if you know, I have this resource, and if you have another resource, and if something happens, well, I'll send some folks to help you. And if things happen in my area, you send some folks to help me.
What was the reason for creating this act in 1991?
Well, it appeared that there was evidently at one point there was they felt that only the areas around San Juan were getting taken care of by the government. You know, again, it's kind of the typical Central South American thing. Right. If the central government is in San Juan, then San Juan seems to be the focus. And it's like in a lot of places around the world, you'll see that the government, you know, is located in the area. That area is getting taken care of very well, and the rest of the country, not so much. Well, guess what? It still ended up that way because as these folks got in power, they just kind of ruled their roost in their own little area, you know, and they still didn't necessarily take care of the local people in those regions.
Now, there was reports about supplies just sitting on the docks of San Juan and at the airport as well. Now,
absolutely. There were shipping containers, loads of stuff sitting at the port in San Juan.
Why?
That weren't distributed right away due to the fact that, hey, nobody told the truck drivers to show up.
God.
I mean, you would have thought that, hey, I've got all these supplies sitting here. And when the storm passes, we're going to need to pass out water and food. And we're going to, you know, normal places have what we call points of distribution, pods, set up so that, okay, in each area, there's going to be a point of distribution where people know that, hey, if anything happens, when the relief supplies come, I go to this location and I can get food, water, medicine, whatever I need. Is going to be at that location. So really there was it wasn't a lack of them not having a plan. It was a lack of them not actually implementing any parts of a plan. And part of that was because, you know, FEMA went down years ago and helped them write a plan and basically did the work for them. So there was really no buy-in from the local government into the plan because it wasn't their plan. It was really, you know, it was FEMA's plan. But so with all the nepotism going on, it was, you know, it was like, hey, I don't know what to do. I'm not doing it. So, I mean, we saw the same thing in New Orleans with the local government there. You know, it was like, yeah, okay, man, we're not going to do anything. You know, we're going to end up sending people to a shelter of last resort, a Superdome, you know, versus sending people to a shelter saying, hey, if you're not evacuating, here's a shelter.
Yeah, well, There were a lot of nightmare reports about the Superdome, so that didn't work out well either. Now, when federal troops landed, was there any distribution of the food and water at that point?
Well, it was one of the things that they have to do is they have to work with the local government, because again, the local government is in charge. The federal government just can't come in and say, okay, you know, we're here to save the day, we're Superman, and move out of the way while we take over and do everything we're here to do. So they're actually there to assist the local government in distributing the food, the water, taking care of the people and their needs. And part of it was the fact that, you know what, there was the infighting between, okay, the governor and himself wanting to do things, and he really did have his heart in the right place and wanted to do the right thing. But then again, the mayor was like, well, you know what, I'm looking at running for future political office, and you know what, I'm going to complain about everything. I'm not going to come to meetings, and you know, I'm just going to be a pain in the head whenever possible.
Now,
you know, for example, she was in the hangar at the airport, complaining that we need food and water, and you look behind her and there's pallets and pallets of water sitting right there to be distributed.
I remember that. Now, let me explain to the people. Now, when Dee says that the federal troops can't just come in and take charge and run the show and get things done, some of you may be asking, well, why not? Well, let me explain it to you. There's this thing, in effect, in the United States. It's called posse comitatus. And posse comitatus is something that's used in order to prevent a president of the United States from going buck wild and sending in federal troops without the authority, approval, or permission of a governor or a duly elected official of that state or region. So posse comitatus basically tells federal troops, you can't come in unless you're invited in with approval under their conditions. So that stops federal troops from doing anything like taking over any kind of a situation within the United States and its territories. So, go ahead.
And one of the things that you know, people may say, well, what about after 9/11? There was military troops in the airports. Well, yes, there were. But those were National Guard troops activated under state activation by the governor of those states. And they were able to go in as a state mission and to be able to add extra security at the airports. Not active duty couldn't do it, and the reserve forces couldn't do it, because reserve forces are considered Title 10, and they are a component of the active forces. They're the reserve component of the active forces. So therefore, reserve troops couldn't be used, active duty troops couldn't be used. It had to be National Guard troops activated under the governor's authority.
And before anybody asks, well, what about the jet planes that were Air National Guard? Sorry to break your heart. They were Air National Guard. So don't think that it was the Air Force or the Navy flying their jets through the skies without approval. They were state-activated Air National Guard pilots flying those jets. Now, another thing. I mean, is it safe to us to, is it, from what you're describing, is it safe to describe the politicians of Puerto Rico as basically the mafia?
In some instances, some of the little small municipality governments were kind of like that. And they wanted FEMADIS to drop off supplies, and they said, we'll take care of distributing them. And FEMA kind of said, well, you didn't really have a plan to do any of this stuff before. Why would we drop this stuff off here? How are you going to distribute it? You don't have any vehicles that can go through washed out areas or go through high water areas. And so how are you going to distribute this stuff to the people that need it? And when they got no answer, they basically said, well, tell you what, we'll just go ahead and distribute this stuff. Because what would have happened was that stuff would have gotten hoarded, and the people that were in the have Arena would have gotten it, and the people that really needed it wouldn't have got it.
So yeah, it's safe to basically describe them as the mafia.
Yeah.
Now the mayor of Puerto Rico, we know that she's under investigation and possibly indictment for her conduct during the hurricane. Now, how much of a pain in the butt was she to FEMA itself?
Oh, a huge. She was a constant impediment to the relief efforts, just due to the fact that she wouldn't attend the meetings so that she could help us with what needed to be delivered where. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. You know, you can have you could have everything you needed, but if you don't know where to take what, you know, what particular supplies, who needs water, who needs food, who needs clothing, who needs sheltering. You know, if you don't know exactly where to go and who to talk to, then how do you distribute stuff? You really can't. You can't be effective. So that was a big hindrance, trying to figure out, you know, who needed what, where to go. You know, there was no points of distribution that were previously identified as to this is absolutely where we want that stuff to go. And I don't think that they, from kind of their response, I don't think they ever really thought that, well, yeah, we're going to get, you know, whacked by a you know, a small hurricane, and then a few months later get whacked by a you know, a bigger hurricane. And now what do we do? But you're right in Hurricane Alley. You know, it's like Oklahoma saying, yeah, you know, I don't know what to do about tornadoes. Even though I'm in Tornado Alley here, you know, a small tornado came through, and now the big one comes through, and okay, I just throw my hands up, and you know, and I'll play politics and do my thing rather than taking care of the people that I was elected to represent.
So she was playing strictly politics.
Oh, absolutely.
And how much of a hindrance was she to the governor of Puerto Rico?
A huge hindrance because, again, she controls the one and only port.
So she's the
So,
kingpin of all the gangster mayors in Puerto Rico.
absolutely, and that's part of the reason she's under indictment. And did you notice, do you see the news story, what was that, about 2 weeks ago, where they found all the shipping containers sitting at a government park, in a parking lot of a government facility that was full of supplies, food, water, clothing, and it was, somebody was like, oh, what's in, I wonder what's in those, I wonder what's those big containers, and I'm sure they probably said FEMA on them. I wonder what's in those big shipping containers. Let's open the door. Oh, hey, look, there's a whole bunch of food. And all of a sudden, nobody knows how they got there and who was supposed to be distributing it. So, I mean, that tells you right there, they had no plan.
Shipping containers just don't materialize out of thin air. That thing must have been sitting there for months.
Oh, since a hurricane. This was stuff that was sh that came in right at, you know, right. Either that was already there or came in right after the hurricane.
So that's been sitting there since the hurricane. Nobody bothered to open it, and nobody bothered to see what's in it to distribute its contents.
Correct. And who told them to put them there? It's not like you just take them and put them in somebody's parking lot with, and the people that own the building go, I wonder what's in those shipping containers. And nobody seemed to know, you know, who authorized them to be put there, who was supposed to be in charge of them, who was supposed to be in charge of distributing the goods inside. And it was things that people needed in those first, you know, 72 hours of, you know, after the hurricane passed.
Oh, sweet Jesus, I'm telling you, I'm completely shocked, and I'll say it, disgusted, because
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you're supposed to be helping your people. That's why you beg them to elect you. But you know what? You could have been honest. You could have been honest enough and say, "Hey, why don't you elect me? Because I'm going to be the biggest mafioso or mafia-like figure in Puerto Rico and make me rich, because that's what I want. I want to be rich. So elect me." But of course, nobody's going to elect them because that's too honest.
Yeah, they promise the world and deliver nothing.
And I mean,
It's very sad. I mean,
it,
really think about it. It is truly sad, and that there were people there were people that died that were, it wasn't the direct result of the direct result. When I say the direct result of the hurricane hitting, they didn't die because, they were drowned by the flood waters of the hurricane or the trees falling on our house. There were people that were perished, during those type of incidents. But then there were, people that later on that were sick. Again, you have your elderly population, you have your people that have medical needs that now you don't have fresh water, necessarily fresh water right away to drink, and because those people didn't, a lot of them were poor and couldn't afford to stockpile water and get the goods that they needed to last them long term. And that was the thing. It was, really and truly, it was way more than 70 to 72 hours to say, be prepared to survive 72 hours, and then we'll come bring assistance to you. Some instances, it was weeks before they were able to get to some of these areas because they were so isolated. And then once, and not knowing where all those areas necessarily are, because again, the folks that came in are not necessarily familiar with the island and the demographics and where people are located and where those villages are. And oh, by the way, how do I land my helicopter when you live in the middle of a jungle in the mountains? There's not just that there's a helicopter landing zone sitting there that I can bring my helicopter in and land on it. So how do I get the supplies to the people up there? How do I have no communication with them. So how do I know what they need?
So, I mean, what you're basically describing, okay, this whole thing with the little fiefdoms and the little like gangster figureheads that are in charge of each fiefdom, the governor is basically unable to do anything to help these people because these municipalities or the heads of these municipalities are telling him, oh, no, 1991, remember. We signed it. You can't do it. Something that was meant to help the people was used as an instrument to hurt the people and make the selected ones become rich or very comfortable.
Oh,
So
absolutely.
now it almost sounds like the former Soviet Union.
Wow, that's a great analogy.
Because the Soviet Union was very much like that. You had bosses that would go to the Politburo and say, "Oh yeah, everything is great in my part of Russia." Then they'd go back and just basically starve and whip the people and get what they want and line their own pockets and then go back to the Politburo and say, "Eh, everything's taken care of. It's good to go. Don't worry about it. I got it. I got it." That's basically what the Soviet Union The politicians of the Soviet Union were like the Politburo. Wow.
Yeah,
Now,
and Russia itself, hey, you know what? That's what the central government was. The Russian people, they didn't suffer so much. But all those other countries, they tended to suffer a bit more.
like the Ukraine. Well, Ukraine really wasn't part of the Soviet Union, but it was influenced. It fell under the Soviet influence. But
Right.
yeah, all right. Now, in your honest opinion, do you, let's say it wasn't President Trump. If, let's say, it happened during the Obama administration, the mess that's in Puerto Rico, would it be fair to blame President Obama?
You really can't blame the president. I mean, it's really and truly it you have to it goes down to the it's again, we always talk about states' rights and territorial rights. So I mean, really and truly, I mean, FEMA itself and the response that FEMA did, from the time the last couple of administrations, the last administration, the current administration, FEMA's response and the way they do business is vastly improved from the way they did business during, say, Katrina. And even Katrina wasn't bad. It was just that things, happened. I mean, if you look at Katrina, Mississippi was damaged from the Louisiana line to the Alabama line and three quarters of the way up the state. It was still a Category 3 hurricane when it was about two thirds of the way up the state of Mississippi. So I mean, it was totally devastated. But you didn't see the news cameras in Mississippi and people going, "Oh my God, I'm sleeping in the Superdome." No, they opened up their shelters. They implemented their plans. They did the things that they were supposed to do. They activated the National Guard 72 hours prior. They reported to Camp Shelby. They had their orders. Highway 49, major route that runs north-south from through the state. We want you to open up Highway 49 from Camp Shelby, which is about 48 miles, 50 miles north of the coast, all the way down to the coast. The northbound lanes and the southbound lanes cut both sides open. Had their civil engineer, their combat engineers clearing the roads. They cleared the roads. They got to the coast. They reported to their location where they were designated to report to, and they got follow-on assignments to, okay, we need some of you guys to go here and clean, start clearing debris. We need other people to go here and start doing these things. You didn't see that in Louisiana. It wasn't until, after the hurricane hit, which, really and truly, it was the hurricane forced the water up the Pearl River into Lake Pontchartrain. And then when the storm moved further north, the wind shifted out of the northeast, pushed the water over top of the levees, the excess water that was in Lake Pontchartrain over top of the levees, and caused the levees to erode by being overwashed. And when the levee failed, which again, that was local politicians refused to upgrade the levees to where they should have been. And there were people that were under investigation at that time in Louisiana for millions of dollars that were gone missing that were supposed to be spent on upgrading the levee system. And but it was a post, I call that a post-hurricane event because it happened after the hurricane made landfall and after it moved inland. That New Orleans, it was a day or so after the initial impact on the Gulf Coast that the levees failed and New Orleans started to flood. And even then, it was 48 hours prior to the hurricane hitting, the governor of Mississippi hadn't heard anything from the governor of Louisiana. So he got on a conference call and basically said, "When do you want us to turn interstate directional?" So that means that the east and westbound lanes of I-10 were all going eastbound to get people to be able to evacuate out of Louisiana, out of New Orleans, and get away from there and move up, up through over into Alabama, Florida, or wherever they wanted to go. And the governor kind of hemmed and hawed and said, "Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you just do it 12 hours prior and leave it, just leave it for 12 hours until the storm hits." And the governor of Mississippi said, "You know what? That's not going to be long enough. You can't move enough. We can't move enough people in that in 12 hours." He said, "How about 24 hours, and we'll leave it directional until a storm hits." But I mean, that's the kind of things that when you don't have a plan, you don't implement your plan. And it was infighting between the governor of Louisiana and the mayor of New Orleans. And you saw
Similar,
that same very. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Puerto
Almost,
Rico.
almost. Yeah, I mean, you just pretty much what cross out Louisiana, right in Puerto Rico, and you kind of see some of the large similarities there. I bet if you go down there right now, and you started talking to them, I'm betting right now Louisiana, yeah, probably don't have any plans, really, really big plans in place for what they'll do. They've got some, they've improved some probably, but in the overall. Nowhere near as comprehensive as Mississippi or Florida.
So one of the major stumbling blocks in order to get Puerto Rico fixed is they have to get rid of that 1991 legislation. True or false?
That will probably be a good fix.
And then the governor will be able to actually help the people of Puerto Rico.
Absolutely.
Something, like I said before, something that was meant to actually give power to these municipalities in order for them to help their own people, they just basically use it as a piggy bank, a money-making system.
Yeah, pretty much for themselves.
Now,
Like most of the other places in the Caribbean.
in order for, step one, they got to get rid of this 1991 plan. Now, what are the plans currently in order to repair the power plants or the infrastructure of Puerto Rico?
Well, they got the one power plant back up and running. I've not exactly sure what's going to happen with the second plant, whether they're going to end up completely redoing it, building another power plant. And but just it's still a struggle getting all the not only the main big transmission lines that have gone in, but now think about it, you got to run that spider web of all the smaller transmission lines to the local people to where they got to go. I mean, you think about an island the size of Puerto Rico and how many thousands of lines you have to run. I mean, it's not something that's done overnight. When they said the oil was going to take, 8 months, everybody was like, "Oh my God." That was a man, that was a best guess, because really nobody's ever done that where they had to run, completely rebuild the whole power grid from the ground up in an area that is inhospitable to being able to do it when you got to run through all over top and around the mountains and and things like that.
I mean, honestly, I'm not an engineer and I'm not an, by any means, an electrical engineer, but I think it'd be easier just to build four power plants in up in the mountains, level the mountain or a mountain, and just spider web the electrical lines in all directions going from four power plants located central of the island. But like I said, the geography and everything else, that's a, that I'm not an engineer, I'm not a civil engineer, I'm not an electrical engineer, I'm not a train engineer, I'm not even a freaking conductor on an Amtrak train. So as far as my knowledge or expertise on this, it's basically zero. But it sounds good, but hey, you know what? A lot of things sound good in life, but trying to do them is a damn nightmare.
Yeah, and it all comes down to who's going to pay for it. And then it takes, those things aren't done overnight.
No.
Because again, we have, you have to do the environmental impact analysis
Oh,
and
God, I
studies.
forgot about that.
So that takes years.
I forgot about
And
that.
then again, you got that pristine rainforest. So there's air and there's nobody lives really in the rainforest. So that area on the eastern central part of the country, you're not going to be able to run lines through there or around there. So, you got to run your major transmission lines around the coastal region and then spider web it up into the mountains and to the areas that need it. It would make sense to have four power plants. One kind of on the north, one kind of northeastern, one south, northwestern, one southwestern, one down on the southeastern end. Or somewhere in that general region and cut down and make so that if one goes down, another one can pick up the load and continue to operate. If two go down, if you got four, it's always one of these things when we're in the military working with generators. And you say if you got one generator, you got none.
Yeah.
If you got two generators, you got one.
Yep.
And because inevitably when you need it, it's going to fail.
Wow. So basically, okay, let's summarize this whole thing. And I'll summarize it and you cut me off when I'm wrong, okay?
Alrighty.
All right. So the infrastructure is dilapidated before the hurricane. It was a total disgrace and total shambles, and basically built just post World War II. The roads around the tourist areas or around the coast, nice roads. They got tons of potholes, but at least they're roads. Everything else is basically a dirt road, which means it's susceptible to mudslides. It's susceptible to being just completely overgrown. It's susceptible to just turning into pure mud, making it impossible for vehicles to get through. The politicians of Puerto Rico are basically a bunch of gangsters. Even though the governor tries his very hardest, the governor really doesn't have any power because the municipalities, which are 78 of them, overrule the governor every damn time because they don't want to lose power or control. The mayor of Puerto Rico, well, she was the kingpin mayor of all of them because she had the airport and the ports, and she could basically destroy a municipality all by herself by simply saying, yeah, we'll send them food later, we'll send them supplies later, and never send them the stuff. Am I wrong so far?
No, not so far. You're right on point.
Wow. And one thing we have concluded, no matter who was the president, no matter if it was President Trump, President Obama, it could have been President Carter. Hell, it could have been President Jesus Christ himself, sent down by the Holy Father to fix things up. It doesn't matter. It's none of their fault. No, irrelevant of political of the president, the politicians of Puerto Rico are solely to blame for everything that's happened there and their interference in FEMA trying to get the job done.
Pretty much right on point. And the other thing that people don't realize is that, okay, so we got a bunch of supplies and things that we're going to pre-position. Well, yeah, where are they pre-positioned at? They're pre-positioned on ships. And those ships are coming from the United States. Well, guess what? That big, gigantic hurricane that's 400 or 500 miles across is barreling up through the Caribbean. So where do we send the ships? Because okay, where's that hurricane going to go once it passes Puerto Rico? Is it going to turn and go up the East Coast into the shipping lane from the United States, from Charleston or Jacksonville or some of the major ports down south? Or is it going to go up into the Gulf of Mexico and, whack the ports out of New Orleans? So where do I put my ships? I don't want to put my ships directly into the hurricane's path. So that means that the ship has to either stay in port or it has to go way, way east before it can even make the turn south to go to, southeast to go to Puerto Rico.
Unreal.
Whereas, everybody says, well, the response to Houston was so much better, and the response to Florida was so much better. We took care of those people because they were here in the United States. Well, yeah, it was a lot easier because, you know what? I can park the supplies and people in Mississippi or Louisiana, a day's drive away, or I could even park them. Okay, it's going to hit Houston. Well, I can park folks in Dallas.
Right.
And say, okay, when the storm passes, you drive down there and start doing your thing. I can have all those telephone poles on trailers, on trucks, being shipped there in a day. And I can have all the workers in the world because there's places for them to stay. How do I get them to Puerto Rico when the airport's closed? So I can't fly you in. It takes weeks for a ship to get there because, oh, by the way, it can't take the most direct route because the hurricane's coming. And how do I send people there if I don't know what the extent of the damage is going to be? So who do I send in advance?
Well, the only answer is for the federal government to build the Trans-Caribbean Highway, and that's about it. Other than that, you're absolutely right. And by the way, yeah, that's not going to happen. There, ladies and gentlemen, there will be no Trans-Caribbean Highway. Don't hold your
Or tunnel,
breath.
or tunnel.
Oh, don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath, because that's going to be a deep tunnel. That's going to be one very deep tunnel. They got to go way down deep to get that across. But anyway, all right, D, you know what? Thank you for this enlightening information. You are my inside man when it comes to all this good stuff. And I want to thank you again from the bottom of my heart. and sh for sharing this information because, well, this isn't information that was supposed to be known by the world. And it's just stuff that needed to be said and understood by the American people about the truth about Puerto Rico. And I want to thank you. And you know what, my brother? I will be talking to you real soon again.
Thank you, 0010. You are the man.
Nah, you the man. Take it easy.
All right. See you later.